Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you every Sunday night by California 1020. 10 miles, 20 bands coming up on Sunday, February 15th. Del Mar Fairgrounds to beautiful Encinitas and back along the coast. We're also brought to you by Core Sports, the best in women's athletic wear, where fashion and performance intersect. iTunes, you can check out all of our Babbittville interviews on iTunes. Our next guest from the California 1020, cal1020.com, Mr. Peter Douglas. Peter, how the heck are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Hey, love it, Peter. So, Peter, take us back. People don't necessarily go to school to become race directors. What was your career path before you fell into this race directing biz?
Well, yeah, I guess I am a race director, but I was, before I joined into running event business, I was a kind of fresh out of college. I went to Cal. You know, I came to San Diego. I was a bartender on Invader Cruises, actually.
Sweet!
Out on the bay. Yep. And really, I was a running junkie. I love to run. I love to sort of participate in the many, random 5 and 10 Ks and things like that that went on in San Diego County. And I just sort of gravitated towards the running event planning because I enjoyed running, and I enjoyed those kinds of activities, and I pretty much hated being a stockbroker, which was what I was before I moved to San Diego.
So basically you took your two loves. You worked on Invader Cruises, so you were a cruise party guy, and you like running, so it's like, let's create, how can I put those together? Maybe we'll put running events on where you party along the way.
Right, and I guess you could say that, but there really isn't much of a career path in being a bartender on Vader Cruises, I can tell you that. So I tried to make my own path, really, and I got lucky by meeting a guy named Tim Murphy who was just getting off the ground when I moved to San Diego, and he's the one who kind of really built the running event industry probably more than anybody else in the country.
Well, no question about it, because what Tim did, well, first of all, Carlsbad 5000 was an epic event, and it really, I mean, at that point, nobody was running a 5,000-meter race. If you were, when I would drive to L.A. to cover events, when I would actually, 10K was the distance, and 5K was always considered a fun run. And
right.
Tim was really the first guy to take a 5,000-meter event and make it into a race where the times mattered. And bringing in Steve Scott and John Walker and, all those type of guys to design a course for him and letting everybody go off with their own specific age group. That was totally unique at the time, right?
It sure was, yeah. And certainly, Tim had a flair for the dramatic, and teaming up with Steve Scott was really got him a lot of attention. 3 years in a row, there was a world record set by Steve Scott at the 5K distance on the road. So that was really some smart move there, but really the people's aspect of that event, where everybody got involved, and it was a beautiful course and a big party afterwards, is what really brought that event to the forefront and made it so popular, and it still is today, still running today after 30-some-odd years, I think.
Yeah, I remember talking to Tim when he was first talking about the concept of Rock and Roll Marathon. And back then when you built events and, like Carlsbad 5000 built from, 4,000 to 5,000 to 7,000
right.
over time. And Tim was going, Bob, it's a different era now. When we create rock and roll, we got to come out hot. We got to be huge right from the beginning. And so with that, when you were working with Tim and you're going to be the race director for first ever rock and roll in San Diego, when he said, hey, I want, 20,000 runners first time out, what were you thinking?
Well, I thought that would be a dream, and so did he. Really, he was pretty kind of demanding about it. But our internal number was 12,000. We were like, hey, if we get to 12,000, we're going to be pretty happy with this thing. And the whole concept of rock and roll and live music on a marathon course was obviously very new. A lot of people laughed at us. They thought it was stupid, and it wasn't going to take off at all or anything. But I remember when we started promoting that event, we actually promoted it at Boston Marathon in 1997. We started promoting it.
A year ahead of time.
A year out. The race was actually going to be in June of 98, the very first race. But we launched it at Boston Marathon in 97. The race was with 20,000 runners, which is the cap the city gave us the first year. So that's what
it sold out. How far before the race?
6 months before the race, January of 98, we were sold out.
I think what they did, it was pretty cool because he had Elvis impersonators at Boston with posters that said, because I think it was around the 100th anniversary of Boston, you missed the first Boston, don't miss the first rock and roll.
That's exactly what it was. The 100th anniversary of Boston is what it was. And there were some Elvis impersonators there. I don't think one of them was Bob Babbitt, but I know there were some impersonators there. And we kind of came out with a splash at that expo, and the concept was so new back in those days, you know, entertainment or a themed kind of event that people just, you know, latched onto it, and we were sold out very early. The other thing is there's no real email marketing or this sort of viral Facebook, all this other stuff that happens these days. I mean, this all went on by word of mouth mainly, and a few print ads and a couple of expos. But there's none of this this going viral kind of stuff, which kind of can launch things these days.
Well, and you were one of the early adapters in terms of online registration. Wasn't Rock and Roll San Diego one of the first events to use that?
It sure was, yeah. And we were actually the first major client of Active Network, which a lot of people are familiar with, and helped to get Active rolling off the ground as well. And we're at the forefront of the online registration thing, and obviously that's a big part of the whole business today too. Sure.
Well, the other side of that is very few events. You had New York, you had Boston, Chicago. You hadn't had many new marathons come out when you guys started Rock and Roll. Plus, no one was basically taking events around the country. When you went to, and I'm assuming Rock and Roll Arizona, was that the second one? Or Country Music or Virginia Beach. I think you were the first company to basically put on events outside their own region.
Yeah, and really, to Tim's credit, we were one of the first companies ever, I think. I mean, before, really, we had Elite Racing, and we had this event management company specifically for running events. I mean,
right.
That's what we were doing. There really wasn't much. I mean, the events you mentioned, Boston, New York, some of these other major events are run by clubs. I mean, these are nonprofit or so-called nonprofit, clubs that are running these monster events. And Tim created an agency, essentially, a promotion and marketing agency and operations, and we created these events from scratch and built them in various cities around the country with varying degrees of success. Actually, our first country music event, which was the second themed race in Nashville, was kind of a bomb by our standards. We had 6,000 runners the first year. That event is currently in the 25,000 to 35,000 range. It took a few years for that thing to get going, but the other ones that we rolled out, there was an Arizona Rock and Roll, the Virginia Beach Half Marathon, which was really the first half marathon destination event. I mean, those started big at 25,000 runners, and then we added some more after that.
Well, there was a point there, and I always look at the synergy between the Ironman Triathlon and Rock and Roll from a perspective of, for events to be successful, I mean, successful and draw national and international sponsorships and people to travel, the distance has to be worthwhile to travel to. People aren't necessarily traveling for 5Ks or 10Ks or for a sprint or Olympic distance triathlon. They would travel for an Ironman to Hawaii. They would travel for Rock and Roll to San Diego. But would they travel for a half marathon, and would they travel for a half Ironman? That was sort of the people didn't know, right? You guys were the ones who were jumping off the cliff going, we think people will travel to Virginia Beach, and Rock and Roll Arizona had a half to do a half marathon, and you were proven correct.
Yeah, and that was a bit of a surprise in those days, but it's pretty much the norm now. I mean, obviously, major marathons are travel events. Everybody knows that. Half marathons are travel events, too. People, there's a lot of there are a number of major half marathons. There's a lot of middle half marathons and some smaller level ones, but half marathons have proven to be definitely travel events if you provide the things people are looking for and a destination that's attractive. People will travel and go to those. And, you know, I believe that our distance, the 10-mile distance, is a travel distance, too, as long as you provide other things that runners are looking for. I mean, you can't roll out a marathon or half marathon or 10-miler, such as we are, and in a sort of low-budget, rinky-dink kind of way and expect people to travel. You have to put on a big show, and if you can do those things and combine it with the distance that is attainable and a challenge, then you can get something. I don't think you can really ever make a 5K that much of a travel event. Even that fantastic Carlsbad 5000 we were talking about, really the only people traveling for that are the athletes who are coming for the prize money.
Right.
It's tough to make a 5K travel event. A 10K is pretty marginal too. I can't think of really any 10Ks that are travel events, but
no.
But I believe that 10-mile is the travel distance, and we've proven that actually with our Austin and California race.
Well, let's take us back a little bit. After Rock and Roll sold in 2008 to Falcon Head, and then not long after that, I think you moved on,
mm-hmm.
and started your business at TKO.
Yep. Turnkey operations, yeah.
Turnkey operations, primarily doing street closures and things like that.
Yeah, Bob. I had a as being one of the principals of the Elite Racing Company, when I left the company after the sale, I had a non-compete, a 3-year non-compete. I couldn't really get back in the event business without getting in hot water with the private equity guys. So I moved to Austin. I started a traffic control business, which is barricades, cones, message boards,
sure.
airports, construction type company, really. And we also had many event clients, but we did traffic control and road closures and equipment for events and construction jobs, city jobs, things like that, which I'm still doing. That's still part of what I do in Austin. But when my non-compete expired, I got back into the event business, and I created a race in Austin called the Austin 1020. Which is a 10-mile race, and 20 bands on the course, a band every half mile, and a headliner concert. Similar kind of theme as my previous events, but perhaps a little more substantial, really, when it comes to the music, and obviously a different distance. And went over great in Austin, and now we're doing it here in Southern California.
So coming up February 15th, and what's cool about it, anytime you can run along the coastline of California, that's pretty sweet. So going from Del Mar Fairgrounds up to Encinitas and back, and I think don't you get to run through, like really run through the fairgrounds and through the stables and stuff?
Yeah, our race here in San Diego County, in North County, there we're really excited about our course. Obviously, we did it last year on February 16th. We're going to do it on February 15th coming up in 2015, but yeah, we started the fairgrounds, which is obviously a fantastic venue. Lots of parking, and it's really beautiful for all the things that we're doing at the start and finish. But we do have a little stretch. We run through the fairgrounds. We call it the country music mile, or the country mile.
Oh, I like
that.
We
got a country music theme through there. We've got horses. We got cowboys. We've got all kinds of interesting things through the stables in the fairgrounds.
I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, I mean, most of the genre of the music that we have on our 20 stages throughout the course is sort of pop and rock and roll, but we don't necessarily pigeonhole ourselves into any particular type of music. So we've got this little country section in the fairgrounds. You know, we're running up and down the coast on the Coast Highway where there's lots of great local rock and roll music and bands. And, we put a stage and a real band and, live amplified music every half mile on this course. So there's a lot of music on our 10-mile course for sure.
So the party
is scenic as well.
The party atmosphere for you is and the music, obviously, from talking to you over the years, this is, you could get by just, not having stages and putting guys on the side of the road, but when you're doing this, it seems like you're always thinking, you know what, this is, I want this to be a destination. And to be a destination, it's got to be first class.
Yeah, it sure does. And really, and people aren't stupid too. I mean, if you put on a race and you say you're going to do something and you don't do it, then it comes back to bite you. And the best way to build a race is by word of mouth. We know that our 1020s are doing well and have done well because we basically do what we tell people we're going to do, and and there are some big shows when we actually do them. So, yeah, we have some real stages. We got some real amplified music, some real good rock and roll bands on the course. And then when we get to the finish line, the party that we have there is a real party, too. We've got a huge beer garden going on, and we have headliner shows that are spectacular for all our participants to enjoy at the finish line.
So can you talk a little bit about who your headliner is going to be?
Well, you know, that's funny you mentioned that. We actually just finished up signing our headliner for our 2015 race here in California. We're really excited that that Don Felder is going to be there. Don Felder, who is a former Eagles member.
Wow.
And, he actually played last year at our inaugural race, and he went over so well. I mean, it's kind of like an Eagles concert at the finish line. It's not really, because he's certainly not a member of the Eagles anymore, but he wrote a number of their biggest hits. He played, Hotel California, Life in the Fast Lane, Already Gone, a number of the biggest hits the Eagles ever had, which he co-wrote and was the sort of lead guitarist on them. And when he plays these songs at the finish line, it truly sounds like you're listening to the original band. It was an amazing concert. And what he did last year, too, which I'm sure he'll do again, is he brought, he has his own little band. It's kind of like an all-star band group.
Yeah.
And he had a lead guitarist from The Who, not the main lead guitarist.
Right.
He had one of the guitarists from The Who. He had the drummer from Pink Floyd.
Oh, my
and
God.
And he had a former keyboardist from the Eagles. So he had all these guys who were just big, big-time band members who are playing with him, which he'll be bringing again and stuff. So we're really looking forward to that show.
You know, Peter, the other thing that impresses me is that you're one of those guys who looks at all the feedback and responds to it. I mean, last year they had an expo at the venue, and people had to pay for parking. So this year, you're where? Roadrunner Sports with no cost for parking.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of the things that we kind of made a mistake on last year, and so we fixed that. We had our pre-race expo where everybody's got to pick up their packet and their shirt and all that stuff at the fairground, which was great. But we just didn't quite have we weren't quite ready to have a big expo at that point.
Sure.
And unfortunately, Fairgrounds charges $10 for parking.
I know,
People are paying and very upset. So we've moved that to Roadrunner Sports up off of the 52 on Convoy this year. But one thing we do for our runners is the Fairgrounds makes you pay $10 when you come to an event there, no matter what you're doing. But on race day, we cover that cost. We cover that for all our runners. Nobody has to pay to park on race day. And now that we're doing our expo off-site a couple days beforehand, there'll be no charge for parking for anybody, really.
Love that. And yeah. I got a chance to take a look at the medals and logo, just very first class.
Yeah, we try to do everything right, and we certainly encourage everybody to take a look at our Facebook page, our California 1020 Facebook page, if they can keep up on what we're doing. We've released our medal design for 2015, which is spectacular. I think people will be interested in that preview. We're working on our shirts that we'll sort of be doing some sneak previews on that. Again, we just signed our headliner concert, so we're excited about that. And we have registration open. You can register at cal1020.com.
And what would be good numbers wise for the event? What are you looking for?
Well, in the old days when rock and roll was fresh and new, we'd roll these things out, and we'd often get 20,000 runners first year. Those days are kind of over. Last year we had about 5,000 runners. I'm looking for 6,000 to 8,000 this year. I think that's probably going to happen, and we'll see where that takes us. But
I love it.
We certainly have a great venue and a beautiful course, and I think we've got a winning formula. So I hope everyone comes on out and sees what it's all about.
So right now there's two 1020s, Austin and San Diego. Is this something that you're? Hey, we took rock and roll to 34 markets. I think I'm going to do the same thing here.
Well, we took rock and roll to 8 markets. When Elite Racing was sold,
right, you had 8 markets.
Private equity guys, we had 8 rock and rolls, and then it exploded kind of after that. But and there's some pros and cons to doing that kind of thing. But we have a race in Austin. It's a March race. We've got a race here in California in February, and we are looking to do some more 1020s because we've had some success. But we're gonna probably take it more the the slow and steady elite racing way versus the hard charging private equity way. Not to say that there's pros and cons to both of those things, but
absolutely.
I'm going to stick with the elite racing way.
The tried and true, go with that. Yeah. So
one a year is a good pace, I think. One event a year to develop is really a good pace.
You know what? That's what we did with Muddy Buddy as well. You know, it was just that's the way you find a course. You make sure that it's it works, and then you do one at a time and you do it right. That's nothing wrong with that philosophy.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that after all these years that you're still putting on events? You still love it?
You know, I was talking about that recently with somebody, and I can't say I'm surprised because. I'm kind of I've been in a lot of businesses, and I do have, a successful traffic control business, which does quite well. It's not that much fun. It's not as fun as putting on races. I mean, putting on events where people really enjoy themselves and people are setting personal goals or achieving goals or raising money or having fun. I mean, there's a certain amount of personal satisfaction in seeing people improve their lives and have fun doing it. So I don't think I'll ever get out of this business, really.
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes when you become part of private equity, the things that you like doing, I'm sure as an event guy, you wear a lot of hats, right? You're putting on the event. You're involved with the design of the metal. And a lot of times when companies get bigger, all of a sudden it's like, okay, Peter, go design courses. And then you're not quite involved with getting feedback from people. How cool is it to look at the Facebook page afterwards and get those letters where people talk about how great the event was and how the event, training for the event and then finishing the event changed their life?
Well, that's really the bottom line right there. I mean, it's great to see that kind of feedback. And when you do it right, it's very satisfying and exciting to see how people respond to the kind of things that you do. But not all comments are good. We get some complaints now and then too that we take very seriously, and so we try to deal with all the feedback that we get. But the personal gratification of listening to people compliment or enjoy what you've taken so long to put together is really the reason why I do this and why my staff does it too. The people who work for me are the same way.
Peter, thanks so much, man, for taking time. It's great to have you back in Southern California. What you did with creating the original Rock and Roll Marathon really changed the face of running, right? And actually something we haven't mentioned was really the Rock and Roll Marathon series was really the first series that showcased charities. And really, at some point, I think Leukemia and Team and Training has raised $100 million through Rock and Roll Marathon. How important was that to you and Tim at the beginning?
It was very important. Oh my gosh, it was. Tim personally has some health issues that are a concern to him, and I know this kind of leukemia and some of these other major diseases are things that pays close attention to. I mean, he was named Man of the Year, I believe, by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society the first year that we did the race, because $12 million went to charity. I mean, that actually went to their pocket. They netted $12 million out of that race.
Wow.
After all expenses were paid. And rock and roll marathons really are at the forefront of the charity fundraising that's going on now with so many, just about every running event there is. And that's just a huge legacy of the event series that the Rock and Roll Marathon is. So.
Well, you should be very proud of that. Well, what's cool is when you can do something twice. It's when you create something like Rock and Roll and then go, well, I think I can do something. You know what? Will people travel for a 10-miler? If there's 20 bands and there's great medals and it's an awesome course along the coast, why wouldn't they travel? And basically, you've got one of the main guys from the Eagles playing your post-race concert. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty good formula, and it's a different world putting on events these days. A lot more people are involved with it, but I think that if you put on quality races and you really care about what you're doing, that you can always be successful. So.
No question about it. Peter Douglas, thanks so much for taking time. Again, it's cal1020.com. It's coming up on Sunday, February 15th. 10 miles, 20 bands, Del Mar Fairgrounds to Encinitas and back.
And Babbittville Radio was brought to you by California 1020. Again, 10 miles, 20 bands coming up on Sunday, February 15th. By Core Sports, the best in women's athletic wear. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville Radio on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.